Good morning, page 121. Habit, a delight in itself. Except for this one drawback, the forming of a habit in the children is no laborious task, for the reward goes hand in hand with the labour, so much so that it is like the laying out of the penny with a certainty of the immediate return of a pound. For a habit is a delight in itself. Poor human nature is conscious of the ease that it is to repeat the doing of anything without effort, and therefore the formation of a habit, the gradually lessening sense of effort in a given act, is pleasurable. This is one of the rocks that mothers sometimes split upon. They lose sight of the fact that a habit, even a good habit, becomes a real pleasure. And when the child has really formed the habit of doing a certain thing, his mother imagines that the effort is as great to him as at first, that it is virtue in him to go on making this effort, and that he deserves, by way of reward, a little relaxation. He will let him break through the new habit a few times and then go on again. But it is not going on. It is beginning again, and beginning in the face of obstacles. The little relaxation she allowed her child meant the forming of another contrary habit, which must be overcome before the child gets back to where he was before. As a matter of fact, this misguided sympathy on the part of mothers is the one thing that makes it a laborious undertaking to train a child in good habits, for it is the nature of the child to take to habits as kindly as the infant takes to his mother's milk. Tact, watchfulness, and persistence. For example, and to choose a habit of no greater consequence except as the matter of consideration for others, the mother wishes her child to acquire the habit of shutting the door after him when he enters and leaves a room. Tact, watchfulness, and persistence are the qualities she must cultivate in herself, and with these she will be astonished at the readiness with which the child picks up the new habit. Stages in the formation of a habit. "Johnny," she says in a bright, friendly voice, "I want you to remember something with all your might. Never go into or out of a room in which anybody is sitting without shutting the door." "But if I forget, Mother?" "I will try to remind you, but perhaps I shall be in a great hurry." "You must always make time to do that." "But why, Mother?" "Because it is not polite to the people in the room to make them uncomfortable." "But if I am going out again that very minute?" "Still, shut the door when you come in. You can open it again when you go out." "Do you think you can remember?" "I'll try, Mother." "Very well, I shall watch to see how few forgets you make." For two or three times Johnny remembers, and then he is off like a shot and halfway downstairs before his mother has time to call him back. She does not cry out, "Johnny, come back and shut the door," because she knows that the summons of that kind is exasperating to big or little. She goes to the door and calls pleasantly, "Johnny." Johnny has forgotten all about the door. He wonders what his mother wants, and stirred by curiosity comes back, to find her seated and employed as before. She looks up, glances at the door, and says, "I said I should try to remind you." "Oh, I forgot," says Johnny. But upon his honour, and he shuts the door that time, and the next, and the next. But the little fellow has really not much power to recollect, and the mother will have to adopt various little devices to remind him. But of the two things, she will be careful that he never slips out without shutting the door, and that she never lets the matter be a cause of friction between herself and the child, taking the line of his friendly ally to help him against that bad memory of his. By and by, after, say, 20 shuttings of the door, with never an omission, the habit begins to be formed. Johnny shuts the door as a matter of course, and his mother watches him with delight come into the room, shut the door, take something off the table, and go out again, shutting the door. The dangerous stage. Now Johnny always shuts the door. His mother's joy and triumph begin to be mixed with unreasonable pity. "Poor child," she says to herself, "it is a very good of him to take so much pains about a little thing just because he is bid." She thinks that all the time the child is making an effort for her sake, losing sight of the fact that the habit has become easy and natural, that in fact Johnny shuts the door without knowing that he does so. Now comes the critical moment. For some day, Johnny is so taken up with a new delight that the habit, not yet fully formed, loses its hold, and he is halfway downstairs before he thinks of the door. Then he does not think of it, with a little prick of conscience strong enough not to send him back, but to make him pause a moment to see if his mother will call him back. She has noticed the omission and is saying to herself, "Poor little fellow, he has been very good about this long time. I'll let him off this once." He outside fails to hear his mother's call, says to himself, fatal sentence, "Oh, it doesn't matter," and trots off. Next time he leaves the door open, but it is not a forget. His mother calls him back in a rather feeble way. His quick ear catches the weakness of her tone, and without coming back, he cries, "Oh, mother, I'm in such a hurry," and she says no more, but lets him off. Again he rushes in, leaving the door wide open. "Johnny," in a warning voice, "I'm going out again just in a minute, mother," and after 10 minutes rummaging, he does go out and forgets to shut the door. The mother's mistimed easiness has lost for her every foot of the ground she had gained.